hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily David Toller podcast for the 23rd day of August 2019. It's the day before my dad's birthday. Happy birthday, Dad, even though you don't have internet and never listen to this show. I love you anyway. Lots of things to talk about. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend and rating and reviewing and sharing on social media and all that good stuff. I owe you any success this show ever achieves because it's just me. And I put it out there and you guys are, I'm patient zero. You guys are the carriers and you spread it around and you infect others. So, well, I don't know if I could make it any more disgusting, but I mean it sincerely, not the disgusting part, the gratitude. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It's just that simple. That's how you enter all the contests and everything. The Charlie Hurt book, the interview, it's Friday, so the half of the show is the interview, and I went lazy. I'm going to make one person in Scotland very happy, who is a big fan of my friend Brian Darling. He came in again, because starting off the week at the beach is not the best way to go. Plus, everything was all screwed up, and I needed a week with somebody without a book to try and catch up. So we got Brian Darling. I forgot to bring in the list of entries for the Charlie Hurt book, so I drew them myself at the end of this segment. Before we get to the interview, I will announce the two winners and congratulate them profusely. And if you didn't win, there's still two other copies. So it turned out I had five copies signed by Charlie, so we'll give those away in the near future. At the end of the year, I plan on doing a big, here's a pile of books, send in your entry and draw in a bunch of them. It's just going to be a pain in the ass going to the post office that day. But still, it's weird. The envelope is almost more expensive than the postage. It's nuts. Anyway, lots of stuff to get to in the half an hour we have together. Anyway, the Obamas bought a new house up on Martha's Vineyard. It's kind of funny. The Democrats are running around going, Donald Trump is getting rich while he's a president. It's emoluments clause. Emoluments clause. This is an outrage. We must see all of his taxes and we must stop it. And he must divest himself from all of his businesses. Donald Trump was a multi-billionaire when he became president of the United States. Do you really think he's going to risk spending the rest of his life in prison for a couple of $100 from a night in his hotel and then selling U.S. policy that way? Of course not. But that hasn't stopped the liberals from whining and complaining and saying that this is what Trump is doing in the presidency. Oh my God, they rented a suite of rooms. That puts at least $5,000 in Donald Trump's pocket. He's going to sell out the country. All past, Barack Obama is probably the richest ex-president we have. I mean, in realistic terms, it's the Clintons, because the two of them together, she was a senator, being able to sell that was pretty profitable, and then being able to sell Secretary of State was really profitable, and it was really profitable when they thought she was going to be the next president. So over, but they did it through the foundation, so they could live off that money and not have to pay taxes on it. The Obamas just got straight up bank, $60 million for a book each from them. At least $50 million to $100 million from Netflix. So they're buying a $15 million oceanfront estate in Martha's Vineyard to be with the common folk, of course. That's what they really want to do. That's who they are at their heart. They're just the common folk. Right. It's, I mean, good on them. But I think that, you know, if you really believe that climate change is going to bring about the end of Western civilization in the next decade and flood coasts and cause people to have to seek high ground, I'm not sure buying oceanfront property on Martha's Vineyard is a particularly smart move. But then again, that's all predicated upon the Obamas and any liberal, really, buying into that crap, which we know they don't. Anyway, don't need to cover that. I just wanted to mention it. Good on them. I don't have a problem with them making money. I just wish that they didn't have a problem with everybody else making money. Remember when Barack Obama said, I do think at a certain point you made enough money. When do you hit that number, Barry? When is that number going to be? Because I'll take the overflow. I'll take any excess you are riddled with guilt over. Can we do that? I doubt he'd be down for it, but I certainly would be. But I am down for our sponsor, Life Change Tea. That's right. It's a game changer. Ooh, imagine how much Life Change Tea I could buy if I had Obama money. I've been drinking Life Change Tea for about 3 weeks now, and I feel so much better. I can't tell you how much more energy I have, and it's not just because the weekend is upon us, because I work all weekend, too. I never get a day off. How does it work? Life Change Tea. It's a proprietary herbal formula. It's quite tasty, and it's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. It flushes you out, ladies and gentlemen. It flushes you out. All natural. Just other ways to do it. This is the best way to do it because you keep drinking it every day, and it not only flushes you out, it keeps you clean. Let's face it, our food was different 60 years ago. Minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. It's got GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy, heavy, heavy processing. They've depleted some of the nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel run down. Plus, if you're coated up on the inside, your body can't absorb that stuff. That's why you got to get Life Change Tea. Try it for yourself. Go to getthetea.com now. That's getthetea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day, like I said. Life Change Tea is not available in stores, but you can get it like it is, because if you enter the promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, hey, that's my name, at checkout, you get free shipping. So it's like you drove there, except you save all the gas. It just comes right to your house. Follow the instructions and get ready for more energy and a better feeling. Once you get that stuff out of you, you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know that. Now I feel so much better. Life Change Tea. Go to getthetea.com. Okay, let's talk about some of the news of the day. There is some ridiculousness that you wouldn't believe out there. Really quickly, I just want to point out that while the Obamas are dropping 15 large on a mansion, and it's a nice, nice mansion. There are pictures online. It looks like a resort. It looks like a lodge, like a ski lodge. I've never been to a ski lodge, but I've seen movies set at ski lodges, and it looks like that. How much room do the Obamas need? And I wonder if they're going to keep the thermostat set at 78 degrees year-round. Well, not year-round, not in the winter. You're supposed to freeze in the winter. But the government now recommends that you set your thermostat for 78 degrees while you're at home. It's like, you're 10 degrees off from where I like to be. And so screw you, pal. While they're doing that, Bernie Sanders has introduced his version of the Green New Deal. See, it's going to cost $16.3 trillion. That's right, $16.3 trillion, and he claims it will create 20 million new jobs. 20 million new jobs, $16.3 trillion. We don't have 20 million people looking for work right now, I don't think, but hey, you know what? You go, boy. I love these people exposing themselves as the nutballs they are. $16.3 trillion. He's going to sell it as, we need to make sure that the Obama's beachfront home on Martha's Vineyard never floods. Yeah, they totally believe this stuff, don't they? Don't they? It's going to be nuts. He says that it will pay for itself, which of course it won't, because that amount of money doesn't really exist, at least in cash. We're going to have to print it. $16.3 trillion is not chump change. That's more than two-thirds, almost three-quarters, really, of the national debt. So, yeah, if we just do that, that's like a bunch of people watching the Titanic sink and going, you know what? We need to get that water out of that boat or it's going to sink. How about we blow a hole in the other side of the boat? You see where it's rushing in on the right side? If we blow a hole on the left side of the boat, the water will rush right out the other side and it will stay afloat. Problem solved. That's the kind of mentality you're dealing with, but that's what you get when you deal with a socialist. And on the idea of him saying that he is a democratic socialist, I found a very interesting clip. This guy appeared on C-SPAN yesterday. His name is Marion Smith. He is the executive director of the Victims of Communism Memorial Fund. If you're ever in Washington, D.C., over there on, I think it's Massachusetts, just off Massachusetts Avenue, by the train station, by Capitol Hill, not super close to Capitol Hill, but not too far, there is a Victims of Communism Memorial. It's a statue of the Statue of Liberty. It's kind of, it's based on, I believe, because it looks just like it. It looks like the a bronze statue, the version of the Statue of Liberty that the Chinese made in Tiananmen Square back in 1989. It's small. It's not, certainly not anywhere close to the size of the Statue of Liberty. It's maybe 10 or 12, maybe 15 feet tall. And it sits on a pedestal. But it's cool. And it's dedicated to the 100 million or so people who lost their lives to communism in the last century. Well, anyway, the executive director of that foundation, and they hold events around the country, a very important group, because you don't realize more voters today were not alive during the Cold War than were alive during the Cold War. They don't understand what communism really was. Communism, socialism, there's very little difference between the two. So that's why you're seeing an increase in the number of people who embrace that idiotic, destructive, evil ideology, is they really have no idea what it is. The Victims of Communism Memorial Fund, they educate the public around the country about what communism really is, really was, communism, socialism, all of that. Well, Marion Smith was on C-SPAN the other day, yesterday, like I said, and he had, it's about a minute and a half, but it's very interesting because he was ultimately, he's describing communism and he compares it to socialism. And he says, you know, they're basically the same thing. All these communist countries call themselves socialist countries. And then he's asked what he thinks of democratic socialism. Of course, that's an oxymoron. They are the antithesis of one another. Socialism is the power of the state telling you how you must live and what you must do, how much you must give to them and give to others, and they're going to take your money and they'll allow you to keep some rather than the other way around. They look at all money as theirs, and if you don't support it, doesn't matter, tough. You know, even if a majority doesn't like it, it's not like they're going to impose socialized medicine and then suddenly 51% of the country says, we don't like this anymore. And they're going to go, okay, well, then we'll get rid of it. No, that's not the way it works. Socialism has to be destroyed. It has to be defeated. It has to be crushed. It never goes away voluntarily. They don't go, all right, well, that failed. You guys don't like it. We'll give you back what you used to have. We'll give you back your liberty. That's not the way it works. Once government gets your talons into your liberty, you really don't get it back very often. Anyway, I've set this up too much. Just listen to Marion Smith, because if you ever have a friend who's a big nut job left-wing socialist, this guy makes a very interesting point.
How do you define socialism?
Well, socialism is the the public ownership of the means of production. It is a system that ideologically and historically has been anti-democratic, and some of the most unequal regimes in history have been socialist regimes. Marxism, Leninism sort of won the socialist argument in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And, Vladimir Lenin and the Bolsheviks brought to life the first Marxist regime. And every single regime since then, they've called themselves socialists. It's the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Lenin immediately realized communism was too far off. That was the sort of heaven. And they weren't going to be there yet. So they were socialists trying to arrive at communism. Xi Jinping calls what's going on in China, his system of government, socialism with Chinese characteristics.
What's your view of democratic socialism in the United States today?
Well, since socialism and democracy have proven to be completely incompatible ideas, I don't really know what's meant by that. I don't think democratic socialism is any clearer term or any more desirable a term than democratic fascism. And I think those espousing that ideology have a lot to answer for. And I think it is significant that leading politicians calling themselves democratic socialists, be it Bernie Sanders or AOC, they don't condemn the socialist dictatorship in Venezuela under Nicolas Maduro. They don't condemn socialism with Chinese characteristics and the human rights abuses that they carry out against not only Chinese people, but religious and ethnic minorities in the country.
No, they do not. And so democratic socialism, democracy and socialism are the antithesis of one another. Interesting thing. You can find that guy on the Twitter machine, and he tweeted that out. It's at Smith Marion, M-A-R-I-O-N, if you want to see it for yourself and spread it around. But I thought that was a great quote, and it really describes the left today. They want a totalitarian regime. They just want it. They hate despots unless they're their despots. They loved Barack Obama when he was signing executive orders and bypassing Congress. When Donald Trump does it, it's a serious abuse of power. And Donald Trump has done it mostly to undo the executive orders that Barack Obama instituted. So he's undoing things. And this is a horrible abuse of power. It's unheard of. How could he do such a thing? And like, yeah, well, you live by the pen, you die by the pen. Sorry, pal. But of course, Bernie Sanders and his 1.6, his $16.3 trillion Green New Deal, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. They don't care about anything. They'll promise anything. They'll try to deliver. Their ultimate goal is to destroy the country, because then it can be, if you can collapse a system, then you can replace it with whatever you want. People don't generally volunteer to have a government they like replaced. They just don't. They're like, why would I give you my rights? Why would I give up my rights? Not going to do that. But if the system is quote unquote failing, even though, you know, it's being caused to fail by these policies deliberately, then you can get your talons into, I've used talons twice so far, I shouldn't use that again. Then you get your claws into the people, and they'll never get away. Never get away. And if you want a view of the tolerant left, and who these people really are, and why they should never be anywhere near power, I have one name for you. Karamo Brown. Now, if that name doesn't ring a bell, that's fine. It doesn't ring a bell to me either until I saw this story. He's on the show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which I think is on Netflix now. I remember the original Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which was, I don't know what channel it was on, but I loved that show. I thought that was hilarious. I could have used the makeover at the time because I was dressing like a bum and didn't shower very often, and my hair was a mess. But yeah, they have a new one. And Karamo Brown is one of the guys on there. He's also one of the cast members of the new Dancing with the Stars, which, again, really, the stars part is, it's a stretch. There hasn't really been an actual star out there on the show, but who am I to judge? I'm a nobody, so what are you going to do? Still, we've dumbed down. Like, everybody who's ever done a photograph on social media is a model now, or a supermodel. Every model is a supermodel. There was a time when there were, like, 6 supermodels in the world, and then there were a bunch of models. Now every model is a supermodel. Everybody who flips a hamburger anywhere, if they've done it on TV, they're a celebrity chef. Why? Because the words, they don't mean anything. They keep redefining this crap to the point that these words mean nothing. Well, Karamo Brown is very excited to be on Dancing with the Stars, and who can blame him? Make a good chunk of change on there. He seems like a decent enough guy in the interview that I saw, and he made a horrible mistake. In liberal world, not in the real world, in liberal world, and liberal world controls the media and controls Hollywood. He made the mistake of announcing that his fellow contestant, Sean Spicer, is a nice guy. Yeah, no, I know you're waiting for something more there, but that's really what it was. He told Extra that Sean Spicer was a nice guy and all hell broke loose. Here he is making what could be the biggest mistake of his professional career.
Who do you think your biggest competition is?
Biggest competition? Let me tell you something. Sean Spicer and I have been talking. Yeah, like literally I was most excited to meet him because like the thing is that people would look at us and think that we're polar opposites, but I'm a big believer that if you can talk to someone and meet in the middle, you can learn about each other and help each other both grow. And so we have been chatting all day today. Like, he's a good guy, really sweet guy. Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly. Karamo from Queer Eye saying Sean Spicer, nice guy. I know, right?
Dancing with the Stars brings people together.
Dancing with the Stars brings people together. And liberalism tears people apart. Upon hearing that, the left had a collective, they shit a collective brick. is what they did. This spread like wildfire across social media. How could this guy say something nice about Sean, any Republican, really, but Sean Spicer? Don't they realize that he was a propagandist for Donald Trump? A whole bunch of lefties took to their Twitter accounts, all of them verified. Roxane Gay, who's a very, I guess she's famous. She's a writer. I don't really know who she is, but she's a writer, and she is not a fan of people who think differently. And this is kind of funny because all of these people, with the exception of one, is a white person. And it, like, well, how could there be white? Why are white people telling a black person how to think? Because Karamu Brown is black and gay. Roxane Gay, famous liberal writer, tweeted out, "Get a effing grip. There is no friendship with people who enable fascism." Which is probably why she's so miserable, because she has no friends. A guy named Evan Ross Katz, and you think, who is Evan Ross Katz? He is a liberal writer. He writes for MTV, Teen Vogue, Paper Magazine, Playboy. Liberals fail up. He writes for Allure magazine. He tweets out, "Here's Karamu Brown calling Sean Spicer a nice guy, a really sweet guy, because what's morality, really?" I can't believe how people get so offended when somebody says something nice. Samantha Ruddy, who is allegedly a comedian, she does warm-up work, which is means she's not that funny, but she does the pre-show warm-up to get the audience excited before Colbert and Samantha Bee. She's a very hideous-looking person, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. She writes, "The next season of Queer Eye is just going to be them interior decorating a Chick-fil-A." Philip Henry, who is another one of these lefties, who is allegedly a comedian and writer, he tweets out, he happens to be the black man who criticized the Karamu. He says, "You being black and gay running around helping him rehabilitate his image by calling him nice and sweet is disgraceful and normalizes Trump, Karamu. Do you think he'd tweet Black Lives Matter and make you a hashtag if a cop shot you dead tomorrow? Wake the F up." But Philip Henry wasn't done, because liberals are never done. They can't control their Trump derangement syndrome and their full rage. He says, "Always going on about a need for conversations, Karamu. Maybe you should listen to your community that is trying to tell you that Sean Spicer was the voice for this racist administration, and he stood at that podium and defended it by lying to the public and Holocaust denying." They're unhinged. They're insane. They should not be allowed to tour the White House, let alone hold the White House. And another alleged comedian named Ashley Perez. She chimes in. She's a producer as well in Hollywood. She does some Hulu show. She's a writer for something called Good Trouble on Hulu. I don't have Hulu, but that's who she is. She writes, "Karamu, what? This man is complicit in and continues to defend all the actions of the Trump administration. You can't just say he's a good guy now until he's been held accountable." Well, what do you want him to do? You want him to be thrown into a gulag, comrade? A concentration camp? Both were creations of the left, the tolerant progressives. Is that what you want? Is that the world that you want there, Ashley Perez? And don't answer, because we know the answer is yes. We know that is the truth. We know that's how things are. This is how the left views you if you don't toe the line. There is no doubt that Karamu Brown is a liberal guy. There is no doubt that Karamu Brown is on their team. He committed the sin of saying two nice sentences about a guy he's on a dance competition with. And now he is being berated, being attacked, being ostracized from the gay community, as they say. Newsweek has a story, not about how people are unhinged that Karamu Brown said something nice about Sean Spicer as a person, but that he's blocking people on Twitter who are critical of him. Their story at Newsweek: Queer Eye star Karamu Brown is reportedly blocking LGBT followers who are critical of his Sean Spicer good guy comments. That's the story, not the freak out from the blue checkmark Gestapo that demands absolute thought purity. The purity that they demand of thought makes the Nuremberg laws look like vague suggestions. This is how insane these people are. But that's not the story to Newsweek. It's that he's blocking LGBTQ. How do you know the people that he's blocking are LGBTQ? And how do you know he's blocking them because they're being critical of that? Maybe he's blocking them because they're saying he's a sellout. They're calling him racial slurs. They're calling him all sorts of awful things. Maybe that's why they're being blocked, you know? But nope, to Newsweek, it's just because they're critical of his decision, as if they're giving some sort of academic exercise, as if those responses that I read to you and the thousands that I didn't are going, you know, Karamu, I disagree with what you said there, although I'll defend to my death your right to say it. No liberal ever says that anymore. I disagree with what you said there, and I demand you stop speaking forever. That's the new left. That's how they roll. It's really a fight to control the language and what you're allowed to say and what you're allowed to think. That's what the left wants to impose. This story, the last story for today before we talk to Brian Darling, from Fox News. San Francisco board rebrands convicted felon as justice-involved person, sanitizes other crime lingo. They're rewriting the dictionary in front of us. George Orwell would like to come back to life just so he could die again. Crime-ridden San Francisco has introduced new sanitized language for criminals, getting rid of words such as offender and addict, while changing convicted felon to justice-involved person. Well, that'll fool everybody. The Board of Supervisors adopted the changes last month, even as the city reels from one of the highest crime rates in the country and staggering inequality exemplified by pervasive homelessness alongside Silicon Valley wealth. Local officials say the new language will help change people's views about those who commit crimes. Yes, you know what? Now I thought you were a convicted felon, but now that I see that you're just a justice-involved person, well, that's completely different. Here are the keys to my house, my safety deposit box, and all of my bank information. Since you're just a justice-involved person, who could be more trustworthy than that? We're all involved in justice. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, from now on, a convicted felon or an offender released from custody will be known as a formerly incarcerated person or a justice-involved person or just a returning resident. Don't you love these people? A juvenile delinquent will also be called a young person with the justice system involvement. They really are insane. Or a young person impacted by the juvenile justice system. Yes, they were just impacted by the juvenile justice system. When they killed that girl, they just got impacted by the juvenile justice system. And drug addicts or substance abusers, meanwhile, will become, quote, a person with a history of substance use. Substance use. I think most people have a history of substance use. If you've ever smoked a joint or even drank a beer, you have a history of substance use. Quote, we don't want people to be forever labeled for the worst things that they have done, Supervisor Matt Haney told the newspaper. We want them ultimately to become contributing citizens, and referring to them as felons is like a scarlet letter that they can never get away from. Well, God forbid people have to face consequences and repercussions for their actions and then have to make up for that and prove themselves worthy of trust again. That's, of course, insane. That's what the left wants to do. They want to play Pope. They want to offer absolution for everybody and everything, except, of course, conservatives. You can never be forgiven for being a conservative. That's not allowed. This is San Francisco. This is the modern left. This is why they should never be able to sniff the levers of power again, let alone hold them. All right. Two last quick things. I forgot to answer this email the other day from Drew. He says, I wanted to ask your opinion on how much popular culture has become politicized by the liberal media, like how movies such as Captain Marvel have been used by social justice warriors to promote political correctness and crap. Other franchises such as Star Wars have suffered a similar fate. It's not our pop culture that's been attacked by It's not just our pop culture that has been attacked by social justice warriors. Our country's history is being called racist by liberals all the time. I'm a Civil War history buff, and I'm disgusted at how so many Civil War monuments have been removed or vandalized over the past few years. Social justice warriors want to change our country's history to fit their narrow-minded views. So how many young people today want to change our government to a socialist government? They glorify socialism and communism, yet they don't seem to take into account that many shortcomings of these, the many shortcomings of these political philosophies. They need to read a history book about how socialist and communist societies have failed throughout history. What's your opinion on these kinds of issues? I kind of addressed it earlier, but I will remind everybody of what my late friend Andrew Breitbart said, that politics is downstream from culture. Not engaging in culture is a way to lose in politics. Pretending culture doesn't exist is a way to lose at politics. You have to be aware of what's going on in the culture because it will come into politics. And you have to engage in that culture and try and change that culture. I wish conservatives, when you get to the, when we finally get to air the Roger Simon interview, we talk about this. And I think it's very important. I'm not sure if it's next Friday or the Friday after, but it's coming up. And it's very important that this, that conservatives not abandon this fight. Yes, Captain Marvel was a social justice warrior movie. The Star Wars franchise is social justice. It's gone that way. But they're influential, even if you're disgusted by them. You have to be aware of them. As far as the communism thing goes, our schools aren't going to educate people on the horrors of communism and the failure of socialism. We have to do that. Everybody has to do that. They're not going to, these kids aren't going to sit down and read a book. They can barely read a tweet. Not because they can't read, but because they don't have the attention span to read it. So get them in a car, especially your parents with kids that are teenagers. We just, like I said, drove to Delaware and back, 5 hours total in the car. My kids are too young, since only one of them can speak right now. The other one just makes noises. But we listened to a book on tape, Sean Parnell's new book. It isn't out yet, but All Out War. It's freaking awesome. But if you're going on a trip, even if you're just going to take a couple of hours here and there, download a good history book. Make the kids listen to it. Make them take their own headphones off or engage in conversation with them. We have to sort of work to deprogram people subtly. Just sitting them down and browbeating them isn't going to change any minds. They've been marinated in this crap. You got to do it slowly. You got to do it subtly. And you got to counteract it as it's happening. At least that's my two cents. And finally today, I have the winners to announce for the signed Charlie Hurt books. Still Winning is the name of the book. The two winners are Ken Stanley and Tracy Hundley. I assume I'm pronouncing those right. Those are pretty basic names. So congratulations to them. I will be emailing you shortly to ask for your address and sending those copies to you as soon as I can. I have to go out and buy more freaking envelopes. They come in like packs of four. Doesn't last very long. Anyway, congratulations to Ken and Tracy on that. You'll still have a chance to win more books in the future. And I have two more of these books. I'm going to announce this week's contest now. If you want to win a signed copy of Ben Howe's book, The Immoral Majority, email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. As Ben said on the show, even if you just want to burn it, try to win a signed copy of Ben Howe's book. You probably won't agree with everything in it, but it's good to know what everybody else is thinking. Even if you disagree with it, it's good to know what other people are thinking. So we have two copies to give away of that next Friday. Email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, @dailycaller.com. I appreciate the hell out of you listening. Have a great weekend. Only 1 week away from the end of summer and Labor Day weekend, where most people get a 3-day weekend. So look forward to that. That should mean next week will fly by. I appreciate everything you do to help spread the word of this show. Have a great, great, great weekend, and I'll see you on Monday. Now here's the Brian Darling interview.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller podcast for Friday, the 23rd day of August, 2019, the video edition. If you're listening to the audio version, You're wondering why I'm yelling in the middle of it. It's because we're halfway there or a little bit more. Again, I'm Derek Hunter, your host. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com with compliments, complaints, whatever you got. I'll take it. Recipes, send them my way. As we do every Friday, we drag somebody, usually much smarter than us, into our world and pick their brains. This week, we've gone a different direction. We're appealing to our Scotland demographic with Brian Darling, owner of Liberty Government Affairs.
Got it right.
I got it right. I'm getting it right. You know, 28 times the charge.
That's right.
You're the most frequent guest, I think.
Tells you something.
By one. You're my in case of emergency break. Look, I spent the week, or the start of the week, in the beach. And I'm like, I don't really want to do anything this Friday, but I've got to do something. So I had Brian, because I got real people coming up in the future. I got Sean Parnell coming in, talking about his book. I got Roger Simon talking about his book. I got James Hassan talking about his book. You've never even read a book, let alone written a book.
Why would I read a book?
I thought I'd dumb down the audience expectations for the next couple of weeks. It really just shock them, shock the system. But
I will not be marketing a book today.
No, you will not. But I'm glad you're here because it just makes my job that much easier. But you've spent a long time working in the Senate. You've spent a longer time working in and around government. You've been in Washington, D.C. since when?
Well, in the last round since 1999 when I worked for Senator Bob Smith in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
So we're looking at 20 years.
Yes, I'm old.
Yeah, you are.
That's what you're trying to say.
Sir. And so you've seen a thing or two. You've worked on campaigns. You've volunteered on campaigns. You've been a lawyer for various campaigns, in addition to working on the Hill. So I thought, well, this week has been a lot of political news. How about a guy who was involved in this stuff for 20 years? When you go on TV, you're billed as a Republican strategist.
I am.
Which is a job that doesn't exist. It's a garbage title they
it
give
is.
People. But we all embrace it. I've been a Republican strategist many times, and I'm like, I never got that check. Where's that check coming from?
Yes, Republican strategist.
Let's start off with looking back at the week of the President of the United States. It started with the president telling Benjamin Netanyahu, at the end of last week, but it counts, don't let these people in. Don't let Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar in. Why would you let them in? And it makes perfect sense. Why would you let somebody, if you're having a party, are you going to invite your mortal enemy who hates you, hates your family, and wants to burn your house down just because they want to come and they're in the neighborhood?
No.
So
I mean, would the United States allow...
That's why I don't get invited to your parties.
There you go.
Someday
would the United States allow people advocating for an Islamic revolution in the United States to come in and advocate for that as foreigners?
Well, we let Mahmoud Ahmadinejad speak at New York University.
We shouldn't. But ultimately, any country has the power to say, hey, we're not going to allow foreigners to come in our country and start screaming
it's
about
that
overturning the government.
Mentality that is racist. I've watched MSNBC. I've read the New York Times. That is racist. Governments controlling who enters their country. Where do you get such archaic views of the world?
Crazy.
But I found it to be absolutely hilarious because Benjamin Netanyahu and the government over there in Israel pretty much said right away, no, we're not going to let you in, after the president kind of made it okay for them to do it. Whether or not there's a direct correlation doesn't matter, which caused two of the four Gang of Four to run to their Twitter feeds and renounce Israel. They were going to basically had to tweet out what they were going to say in Gaza and the West Bank. And it was Israel's awful, Israel sucks, Israel is not. And hilariously, Rashida Tlaib, who represents where I grew up, that's how far my district has fallen.
And why don't you live there anymore?
I escaped in a hot air balloon, luckily, right at the end of the or before, right after the Clinton administration. She said, "I won't be able to see my sweet, nourishing grandmother. Oh, my grandmother, my poor city. All she wants to do is pick figs with me, and those horrible racists in the Israeli government won't allow me to do that." At which point, the Israeli government said, "Okay, you can come in and visit your grandma. Just." Rashida said, "I didn't want to badmouth you. I just want to pick figs with my grandma." I said, well, as long as you're not going to meet with terrorists and the people you normally hang with in the United States, come on in. The water's fine.
Right.
And she said, "What? Not going.
No.
Never mind.
I got to play victim card.
Couldn't possibly go." She had her bluff called.
Yes.
And it didn't work
had
out.
Had to go with Plan B and the victim card.
When you're looking at not just, I mean, the way it played out, it's clear that Israel and Trump won that dispute the
no
second
doubt.
They invited her in. But the way it was reported, is completely different. Donald Trump, according to the New York Times, according to CNN and MSNBC, is an anti-Semite, wrapping himself in Jared Kushner, who happens to be Jewish, and Ivanka, who is Jewish. And that is somehow makes him an anti-Semite. What do you see in the disconnect between the reality of what happened and the portrayal of it?
Well, first of all, what's been underreported is that there was a congressional delegation, a bipartisan delegation. I believe Steny Hoyer led it. Mm-hmm. There were a number of Republicans and Democrats that went to Israel. These two chose not to go in that congressional delegation. They purposely wanted to cause trouble, set up their own little congressional delegation to go. They wanted,
but there was no delegation. It was just two of them.
Yeah, they and it surely wasn't bipartisan. They wanted this all to happen. This was all because they are probably two of the best professional victims we have in Congress mm-hmm. right now. They love being victims. They love setting up a situation where they can cry, where they can complain and say that, oh, you know, woe is me. They wouldn't let me do this, and they're evil, and I'm great, and everybody doesn't get what we're trying to do because everybody's racist and they hate us.
Of course, that hate would be justified if you get down to it. Both have suspicious ties, we'll just say, and have been on record being horribly anti-Semitic and advocating. Rashida Tlaib has a map of the world where she literally put a post-it note over Israel and wrote Palestine. She's wiped out Israel off the map. This is the world that they inhabit. But the media's portrayal of the president, the New York Times has this big 1619 project about, oh, the 400 years of slavery. They're trying to, in their words, redefine the history of this country.
Got to rewrite history.
And yeah, of course. Basing it on their own perverted liberal worldview. And you end up in a situation where the president of the United States tells obvious jokes, mm-hmm. and they're searching for a way to demonize him over that. On Wednesday, the president was going to Kentucky to speak to a group of veterans. On the way out, have you missed the White House press briefings?
No.
They've been gone for
so
ever.
Great. They were boring, gone. And I didn't get much information out of them. I just saw a lot of reporters screaming and trying to get gotcha moments.
Well, you don't see Jim Acosta as much as you used to. I think it hurt his book sales. But the president's going out to the helicopter, Marine One, and he does what he always does. He goes over and talks to the press. One of the questions was about China. President goes on about how we've got this massive trade deficit, $500 billion that China's gaining over us. We can argue about the validity of a trade deficit and what it really means. But he said this should have been addressed a long time ago, not just Obama, mm-hmm. but previous presidents. They kept kicking the can down the road. And he said, you know, this should have been done before me, basically, but I guess I'm the chosen one.
Right.
Looks up at the sky and says, I'm the one who has to deal with this
crap,
right,
right.
because nobody else was willing to deal with it beforehand. And that was taken out of context.
Shocker.
I am the chosen one,
yeah.
looking to the heavens as if he is saying he was ordained by God somehow.
Right.
And when you see that, you hang in these circles. You know some of these people. You're a regular on MSNBC. Talk a little bit about the coverage that you saw this week of the President of the United States and how it... I want journalism. I need journalism. Mm-hmm. I love information. I can make up my own mind. It seems that everything I get, no matter which side it's from, is trying to make up my mind for me now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am the chosen one is completely taken out of context. It obviously was a joke, much like when the president said he was going to bestow on himself the Medal of Honor. I mean, these are jokes. And the fact that they make them out, the press loves to make them out to be statements of fact, and somehow this shows he's delusional. I mean, he is obviously somebody who constantly is cracking jokes.
Yes.
I mean, he's constantly...
He's self-deprecating, which is something liberals don't get. They love themselves too much to ever make fun of themselves. Plus, they're joyless individuals lately. The Trump derangement syndrome has eaten whatever part of their brain gives comedy.
They're also angry because There's no press briefing, so they don't get FaceTime anymore, and they're angry that they have to sit out there where Trump actually, the president's controlling. He's making himself accessible, which is great. Mm-hmm. He's out there all the time doing these press conferences, and they don't like it because they don't get to yell follow-up questions. They don't get to badger the president or, you know, the presidential spokesman back in the day. They don't like the setup because they don't get to be front and center.
Well,
they don't
the
get
star.
To make themselves
you
a
can't
story.
Even hear their voices, their questions on mic because yeah. Marine One drowns
right.
it out. So who it is irrelevant in the grand scheme.
Yet they're
things.
Given unprecedented access. I mean,
right.
he does it all the time.
What's funny is I remember the Obama administration, he'd do one or two press conferences a year. He would give a 20-minute speech.
Yeah.
It was an hour-long press conference. He'd do a 20-minute speech, and then he would take seven questions.
Yes, and he'd look down and see, oh,
knew exactly who yeah. it was, who was approved,
yeah,
kind of had an
go.
Idea of what the question might be, friendly media. And they loved him.
Oh, yeah.
They've never had this kind of access
right.
to a president of the United States.
I mean, they complained a little bit during the Obama years that they weren't given much access. But, you know, you don't hear – you saw when they did have press conferences, it was like a love fest. It was all loving
what
questions.
What has enchanted you, Mr. President, about
what was your most significant accomplishment? Yeah. Why are you the greatest president we've ever had?
Mr. President,
nation's history.
May I go into the Oval Office and sniff your chair? Would you mind? Is that good? That's the kind of questions that they got.
Yes.
Look it up. Maybe not the chair sniffing thing, but it was the subtext. You know it was the subtext. So you have this difference now, and you have the race coming up. Let's talk a little. I want to talk a little bit with you because you've been involved in presidential elections since at least 2000. In 2016, Donald Trump benefited from about $1 billion worth of free media.
Yeah.
He could call into any morning show on all three of the cable networks at the time. And as long as he wanted to stay on the phone, they would blow off commercial breaks.
Right.
They would do everything.
Yeah.
And he was on there over the phone, which makes for horrible TV, except that it was a phenomenon, Donald Trump.
Right.
And he was able to overcome a lack of organization
uh-huh.
that he definitely did not have a ground game in the primaries.
He would just pick up the phone and call into the
right.
station and say, I want to go on right now. What
and
do you think?
They go, oh,
okay.
Right now on the phone, we've got Donald Trump. And they loved it because they knew it was ratings gold.
Yeah.
That is not going to happen this time at
yeah.
all. He might be able to call into Fox and Friends.
I don't know.
But
it might happen a little bit.
You really think if he calls into Morning Joe, they're going to give him an hour of – maybe they'll give him the time.
Yeah.
But it will be combative.
Yes.
Mika will storm off the set.
Right.
I can't even talk to
yeah.
this man. Joe will try and defend the honor of his third wife. And everybody else will sit around dumbfounded trying to remember the latest liberal talking points. It
right.
won't be like it was then.
Aren't you shocked that Democrats aren't trying to do this? I know that Buttigieg tried to do it for a little while where he made himself available for every interview. But, you know, he was a nobody to start with. He bumped up a little bit. He's still kind of a nobody. But I'm shocked that somebody like Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren hasn't started doing this to get more press coverage because it worked for Trump. But they seem all scared, like they're all terrified of actually talking to people.
Outside of Elizabeth Warren, I'm not sure they know the policies they're running on well
Bernie,
enough to answer
Bernie
any
Sanders
questions.
Does.
Bernie does, and Elizabeth Warren
yeah.
does. But Kamala Harris has flip-flopped 15 different
it's
times
true.
On, I want to take away everybody's health care. I don't want to take away everybody's health care. When you look at the Democratic field, it's Joe Biden and everybody else.
Yeah.
And everybody else seems to burp up somebody new every 6 weeks. This is the new flavor
right.
of the moment. It's, oh my God, Beto is in. We love Beto. And he gets up to about 15-16%.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they look at Beto and go, oh my God, this guy's an idiot. So he goes down, and then here comes Kamala Harris. Oh
yeah.
my God, she's the new. And yeah. then they look at her record and say, well, she put an awful lot of people in prison. And liberals now hate police, hate law enforcement.
She's a prosecutor. I didn't know that.
So that goes down, and then here's Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
He's young and gay,
yeah.
and they're like, and he's also a horrible mayor. So let's push him down. And now it's Elizabeth
right.
Warren's time. Elizabeth Warren seems better prepared to challenge Joe Biden than the others.
Yes,
especially this early.
Yeah.
Do you see her having the sea legs to stay up in the top tier?
I think once she becomes perceived to be a threat, I think she'll be taken down because I argue that she's very inauthentic. She didn't even become a Democrat till she was 47 years old. How many people do you know all of a sudden become woke when they're 47 and say, oh, I want to be a progressive, you know, when they were Republican their whole life? It just doesn't make any sense. The whole
Native
American thing. Well, the
Native American advocate, Donald Trump, was a Democrat until much later in life.
But she is now a full-throated progressive.
Right.
Full-throated, all-in progressive, hero to the left. You know, Bernie Sanders, for all of his faults, he's been a socialist. I mean, he went to the Soviet Union to have
his honeymoon.
Hey, honey, that guy's committed.
On our honeymoon, why don't we stay in bread lines? How about
he's
that?
A real progressive, and she's not. And the whole Native American thing that she can't shake when she made believe that she had this Native American heritage.
I love how
heritage.
She says, and I shouldn't have done that. And I'm sorry. Like, okay, well, just then go the final step and say you did it for personal gain. Because otherwise you're implying that you just did it for shits and giggles.
Right.
Which is not why you did it. Everybody knows why you did it.
The other thing is the strength of her campaign is the weakness. She comes out with a new proposal every 5 minutes. Every day it's some new proposal.
I have a plan for that. Well, I have a plan for that.
She's a senator. Why didn't she push any of these plans? Like, why didn't she do anything?
That's my favorite thing is Joe Biden, when he promised that if elected, he's going to cure cancer.
Yeah.
It's like saying, I have the cure for cancer right here in my phone. And if I'm elected president, I'll unlock the phone and give you the cure for cancer. Right. Otherwise, I'm snapping this in half like it's a spy movie and we're going off to the Bahamas.
Right. All those years as vice president, wasn't the right time.
It wasn't the right time.
I wanted to hold it back.
We had to have a few more people die of cancer before I thought the world was worthy of my wisdom and knowledge. Let's talk about Joe Biden. You worked in the Senate for a number of years. Did you have an opportunity to work around
Met him a couple times. Really affable, nice guy, funny guy. I liked him.
You liked him?
I still like him. I mean, I think he's a good guy. I would never vote for him for president, but I think he's as a human being, he's a likable guy. You can't, as you know, as somebody who also worked in the Senate, not all of these senators are nice guys or nice women. I mean, just look at Amy Klobuchar and her problems with her staff. I mean, it's legendary how awful she treats her staff. And, that matters. I mean, how you treat people matters. So big plus to Joe Biden for that. The other huge advantage that Biden has, other than that people like him, is that he's running against still 20 candidates. If you have 20 candidates running,
you theoretically win a state with 24% of the vote.
Right. He doesn't need that much. And as candidates drop out, that's when he starts getting in trouble. As, Jay Inslee just dropped out, and you might have another one or two or three. As we get past the...
Those two Inslee voters aren't going to swing anybody.
True. But as we get to the future debates where they start whittling down who's allowed to be in the debate. When you're not in the debate, these candidates are going to start dropping out. So as the field narrows, does Biden suffer? And does that support go to other candidates like Elizabeth Warren, like Harris, like Bernie Sanders?
When you look at the rest of the field and the sort of also-rans at the bottom, the Betos and on down, is there natural refuge for when their candidate drops out, an Elizabeth Warren, a Bernie Sanders, or a Joe Biden? The first two seem to be distinct and competing almost for the same crowd, whereas Joe Biden is the safe choice, the moderate-ish choice.
I think if you look at all the polls, the support for all of these candidates is pretty soft. I think, I guess Bernie Sanders is the exception. He's got a strong core of supporters that carried over.
But it's much smaller. He's a victim of his own success.
Right.
He was a novelty in 16.
Yeah.
And the alternative to Clinton, and really the only alternative to Clinton. And so you got all the socialists and all the Democrats who hated Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Now everybody's running on Bernie's agenda almost, so they don't need the old white guy.
Yeah, but he still has that core of support that will not ever go away. I think Biden probably has a lot of that too, where people feel good about the Obama administration if you're a Democrat, and they kind of like the policies. They'd like to see another Obama administration in a year and a half. So, but other than that, I mean, you look at other candidates, I mean, they're, a lot of them are interchangeable. I mean, their policies are pretty interchangeable. And so you can see a lot of fluidity in the support for, like, Elizabeth Warren. I mean, you could easily see that go to Kamala Harris or any of the other progressives. I mean, it seems like everybody is a progressive with the exception of Joe Biden.
When you think about Kamala Harris, after the first debate, she was the darling. She was the hero of the first debate. She took on Joe Biden with on busing. I was one of those children who was bussed, Mr. Vice President. And you would have preferred that I not be here right now. And then it turns out that actually on the issue of busing, they have pretty much the same policy there. She got a bump. She was up in the top two or three.
She played the victim card well.
For a while, for about a month, and then it deflated. She didn't really, did she do anything to lose that support? Or did people, because I think it is, somebody rises up. And they just get this rumble, and it's kind of a bandwagon thing. Like, oh, let's get on Beto. Let's do Beto. And then they look at Beto after they support him, after they write the check, after they give the money, and they go, holy crap, I just gave $250 to Butthead's kid.
Well, she got up in the polls, and then she believed her polls, didn't do anything, and that went away. I mean, it was, you know, it was fair weather support after the debate. Wow, look at how great she did in the debate. I kind of like her. So the pollsters were picking up that she, more people were looking at her, and you know, they, as this happens, people are dating. They're in their dating phase, and they kind of like her for a little while, and then they say, eh, she hasn't done anything since the last debate. All she did was have that one moment. What has she done other than flip-flop on a number of issues? I'm not really liking her. I'm going to go back to Elizabeth Warren.
Historically, governors have made the strongest presidential candidates. But when you look at the Democrats' bench, they seem woke. They don't seem to have a deep bench.
No.
That, you know, what's his face? Bill de Blasio feels that he can get in the race. I know, he's terrible.
He's a joke.
But he feels that he can get in the race and have a shot. Of course, his delusion is a wonderful thing, and who knows what kind of psychotropic drugs he's on. But are you surprised? Where did the Democrats' bench go? And I know I'm setting the ball on the tee for you if you're going to go where I think you're going to go. But what happened to the Democrats' bench?
Well, it can't be governors because they're not. They can't be progressives. They can't be these full-throated progressives because they actually ran a state, and they're not going to implement any of these crazy policies that the—
It's not stopping Gavin Newsom out in California.
Yeah, but California's unique. And California can get away with that. But you look at all the—like, the governor of Montana is not going to be a progressive. I mean, he had to flip-flop on guns just to be in the game, just to even be considered a candidate that had any chance. So, you know, your governors have a hard time being woke enough. I mean, if you're going to adopt the democratic socialist platform of Medicare for All, which abolishes all of our personal health care insurance, our private health care insurance, if you're going to embrace a massive minimum wage hike, tax hikes on everybody, the rich and everybody below the rich, no, you know, repeal the Trump tax cuts, if you're for increasing regulation, a Green New Deal, get paid not to work, I mean, that's not something that a governor can really embrace. So you are seeing a lot of these senators who don't really have to do anything embracing a really crazy left-wing agenda because they can get away with it because they never really had to do anything.
Well, it's kind of funny because you're right about Elizabeth Warren having all these ideas and saying, well, why don't you introduce these pieces of legislation? You know exactly why they're not introducing them, because then they could be submitted to the Congressional Budget Office
and
we would get a price tag attached to it. When they're theoretical, they're whatever number she makes up.
Right.
And they don't want a real price tag.
And think about how bad we are right now with our financial situation as a nation. I mean, that crappy budget deal that just passed blew up the deficit. So we're staring at $1 to $2 trillion annual deficits, which is horrible. But we're what, $22-23 trillion in debt now? The Green New Deal is going to cost about $42 trillion over 10 years.
That's
something
before
ridiculous.
Medicare for All.
Yeah. And it's unbelievable how much money that would, that I mean, it's obviously never going to become reality because we can't afford it as a nation. There's no way we could afford it. But they love talking about it. And how about, you know, free college education, getting rid of all the student loan debt? Those cost a lot. Those are proposals that cost in the trillions. we don't have money for that. But they just roll it out like, oh, no big deal. We can afford it. And they say, oh, we'll just, you know, tax the billionaires and millionaires.
Right. A small tax on transactions.
That wouldn't raise any money. That wouldn't raise hardly any money. It doesn't even come close to paying for any of those proposals.
Well, it lets you know the worldview of the left is they view all money as government money, and they allow people to keep a certain amount.
Right.
So, well, we can afford it because we're the richest country in the world. Well, we're the richest country in the world because our government doesn't take 90% of what people make. They're able to invest it, take risks, and more small businesses go under than survive. So there are people taking risks and losing, and thank God the people who take risks and survive and thrive, those are the people who drive the economy. And it strikes me as either they don't know that or they're counting on their base not to know that. Which do you think it is?
Oh, I think they're counting on their base. I think that they're
You think Bernie knows how capitalism really works?
I think he does.
He's made a lot of money.
Yeah,
too.
He knows. But I think one of the problems is they gaslight their own people. They've convinced them that if you cut taxes, somehow that costs the government money, even though it's our money. It's
right.
So every time I'm debating, you know,
and revenue inevitably goes up.
Right.
There's a small dip, and then it continues to rise.
Yeah. They always say, oh, look at the deficits. It's because of the tax cuts. No, that's really not the government's money. It's not. Government doesn't have the right to all that money. So guess what they cost? Nothing. Because if we had a real scoring system, it would cost the government zero because it's our money. It's not the government's money.
But you worked for Rand Paul. You worked closely with Rand Paul. With the exception of Rand Paul and
Mike Lee,
is there anybody, forget the Senate, is there anybody in Congress who's actually genuinely serious about putting the reins on government spending?
Yeah, but there aren't enough of them. I mean, Thomas Massey.
They all run on it. All the Republicans run on it. They just don't do it.
Thomas Massey in the House, Republican from Kentucky, hero on the issues. He's always getting outvoted. You know, he's usually the one guy standing out there causing trouble. Last year he caused trouble. He forced votes on bills, and the congressmen were screaming at him that they were going to be late to go home for their recess. Chip Roy, he's a Republican from Texas, freshman. He shut down the a bill that was coming up that was a disaster aid bill because it was not offset, and you know what happened was ultimately it passed, but people freaked out.
But they actually had to vote on it. They wanted to do it by unanimous consent while Congress was out of town.
Yes. And he wanted to have a debate on actually paying for it, and he wanted to vote on it. And they said, oh, how dare you slow it down for a few days.
We did it like three times.
They're
acting as though, you know, there's bottled water, and there's thirsty people, and the government employee is about to grab it and say, no, wait, you don't have the money for that. Like, oh, sorry, you're going to have to be thirsty for a little while. And the next day we're ready to, no, we can't.
It's like the 9/11 bill that Rand Paul held up. I mean,
He caught hell for that from John Stewart.
And guess what? It passed. It was always going to pass. And all he wanted to do is discuss how do we pay for it. And it was not something that prevented anybody from getting money.
It might be it's principled,
yeah.
But it's bad optics. Does Rand Paul not care about the optics?
No.
Have you talked to Rand since he had part of his lung removed?
No, I have not. I did wish him well. That was about it. Sent him a little message wishing him well, but I have to imagine it's tough to recover from that. And he was showered with a lot of hate from the left. When anybody says that, oh, you know, Republicans are hate mongers and spreading hate, you wouldn't believe if you look at the post where he talked about on Twitter how he was recovering and, you know, he had a part of his lung removed. It was very hate-filled comments basically saying we wish you would die, don't ever come back to Congress, retire.
But they do it out of a place of love.
Same with the Mitch McConnell incident where some woman was standing out in front of his house screaming that she wanted to stab him. I mean,
just in the heart, just to let her know she was there.
It's amazing that the double standard where the left dehumanizes conservatives to the point where it's okay to call for them getting killed and attacked, but of course the Republicans are the bad guys.
Mm. So where does this go? Where does this end? Who do you see surviving? Who do you see being woke enough in the Democratic primary? Or is there just too many of them that are partially woke that they're going to drown each other out and Joe Biden sort of passively defaults to the nomination?
It's hard to predict, but I would say that
it's not legally binding. So
I think Joe Biden's going to win. I think if you've had a lead for this long, I think it's going to be something he can sustain and continue and move forward with. I mean, if you look at it objectively, he has been had a commanding lead since day one. I mean, there have been a couple outlier polls that have him.
But don't you think that's mostly, oh, I know that guy. You know, here's a list of 40 people running for president. I recognize that name. I'll go with that guy. But the more that people see of him, and I think his campaign acknowledges this, the more they see of him, Bobby Kennedy and MLK were assassinated in the late 70s. I was a freedom rider when you were in diapers. There's so much about his life that he screws up, and so many things that gaffes. It's not all just gaffes. Sometimes he catches himself. Yeah. Sometimes he doesn't catch himself. And he's 76 years old. Back in 2008, you will remember this. I brought this up on the show before. 2008, John McCain, the media was like, John McCain, he's old. He's up there. He's had cancer. He should tell the public that he's only going to seek one term. And that will help allay fears that he'll be too old. Do you remember that argument?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you heard anything similar from Joe Biden?
No.
Because there's no doubt in my mind that John McCain in 2008 had his wits about him in a significantly stronger way than Joe Biden does today.
I agree with you. Yes. No, that makes so much sense. You don't hear any talk of that because that would be a sign of weakness.
Right.
And then he would probably just crater. I mean, if he were ever to say, I'm only going to serve one term because I'm old, that would be the end of his campaign.
But he craters a little bit after the debates.
Yeah, and the fact that
then he comes back.
There were reports that his staff was trying to limit his availability to the press. Not usually good for a guy running for president.
Well, you talk about the people who could call in and get an hour on a morning show on cable news. Joe Biden could get a whole cable news show anytime he wanted.
He won't do it.
They don't do it.
Right.
And
he's obviously running a pretty bad campaign looking to the
general. Can you safe your way to the nomination? Can you seatbelt your way? Child
Hillary
seat yourself?
Did it.
Well, she had
it didn't
a lot
work
of
in
help.
08, but it worked
she
the
had
second
a
time
lot
around.
Of help. The media was on her side. They were running blocker for her.
Yeah, and she didn't have that many running against her. I mean,
no.
And that, you know, that's kind of the illusion of Bernie Sanders being such a great candidate. He was the only real candidate, strong candidate.
As somebody who lived under Martin O'Malley's iron fist in the city of Baltimore, I take issue with that.
Yeah, Martin O'Malley was not a great candidate.
Tommy Carchetti. Watch The Wire. He's Tommy Carchetti. I'm not even kidding. So let me ask you, Brian, as we wrap it up here, give me the next three Democrats who drop out and why.
Interesting. Well,
and don't give me the
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Hickenlooper. Okay.
She's gone. She can't survive. There's no pathway.
She's not even going to make the next debate
no,
stage,
and that's
which
an
is embarrassing for a senator from New York.
Yeah, I would think she would go. I think the governor of Montana, Bullock, I mean, that guy is no – he has
he
no –
He got in far too late.
He got in late, and he doesn't have any reason to run. Like, why would anybody be compelled? I mean, I could see a Western governor who is moderately – you know, a moderate – but he's not. Like, he's basically flip-flopped on guns and a lot of other issues. He sounds like a guy who's trying to be progressive. That just ain't going to work.
The way that Joe Biden could have actually, I think, put this away a long time ago if he had a sister soldier moment.
Yeah.
With the – when they were going after him for what he'd said about working with segregationists, it was stupidly worded, poorly worded.
Right.
But you knew what he was talking about. He's not saying, we used to sit around and figure out ways to oppress black people. It wasn't like that at all. Instead of apologizing, which he ultimately did, he could have had that sister soldier moment where he said, look, we're getting out of control with this thing.
Yeah.
You can't hold people responsible for things they said a lifetime ago. Listen, context matters. And my God, everything isn't racist. Can we get past that? We're cheapening what racism is and thereby hurting people who are really, truly victims of it. But he didn't.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was his pitch to his staff and the staff was like, oh, you can't do that. Because he's got a pretty far left-wing staff. I mean, he's hired a bunch of – he tried to hire away a lot of progressives to run his campaign, and now he's paying the price because he could never say that.
That's the thing that people don't realize, and I got a question about this on Tuesday's show when it was listener email. How much money it costs to run for president. Mm. I was reading just today, Elizabeth Warren has a staff of 180 people.
It's crazy.
And part of it is you want to hire the best people.
Right.
But another part of it is you want to hire the second best people so that your opponents can't hire the second best people.
Right.
So you end up hiring a bunch of people because you need them to do a job and a bunch more people because you don't want them to do the job for somebody else. And you can burn through a ton of money.
It's like my fantasy baseball strategy.
What's that?
I try and load up on all the best players, and I squat on players I don't want to be on other teams. It's worked pretty well.
Do you win?
Yeah, I'm in second place right now. That's not bad.
That's not winning.
I should win by the end of the year.
In the words of Ricky Bobby, second place is the first loser.
That's true.
So there you go. Brian Darling, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I forgot the draw sheet, so I'll draw the book winners at home. And it'll be announced on the audio version of the show. You can find him on Twitter at Brian H. Darling. And I want to give you a second. You have one fan who has emailed me every time you've been on the show and said, well, you should have Brian on more, who lives in Scotland.
Hello, Scotland. I'm
speak
here
to
for
the
you.
Whole country? You can
yes.
speak to this one particular
woman. Well, I
woman.
Think this one woman can organize Scotland for a fan base of support
now,
for me coming on more.
Let's get Scotland to go really big for the podcast, and then Brian and I will come over and do a couple of live shows. We'll do Edinburgh and...
only if there's some golf mixed in.
There's golf. We're not going to fly in. I'm not flying to Scotland for 20 minutes. So we'll do that. We'll come to Scotland. Get us big in... We'll have t-shirts, big in Scotland.
That'd be great. And they love us in Scotland.
And oh, Greenland.
Greenland? Have we bought that yet?
Not yet, but its negotiations are still ongoing.
I don't want to go to Greenland.
Are you in favor of the purchase of Greenland?
I think it's so funny. I love it. I think it's the funniest bogus controversy we've had. Maybe in this.
The president did cancel a state visit to Denmark, seemingly because, well, you don't want to talk about it. Screw it. I'm not going
over
there.
Maybe he just didn't want to go to Denmark.
Well, nobody does. That's beside the point. All right. Well, we're not going to go to Greenland, but we'll definitely go to Scotland. Maybe we can throw in Ireland while we're over there because we just a hop, skip, and a jump. Thank you for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for telling a friend. Next week on the program, I forget who, James Hassan, I think. And Roger, there's a bunch of stuff. Big names coming up, not like this guy. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on Monday.
I don't think democratic socialism is any clearer a term or any more desirable a term than democratic fascism.